Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mysteries with the History, where I'll take you on a wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions, and like you, I want answers. Today, we will be talking about when allegedly UFOs went rogue and started attacking the townsmen in Colares, Brazil. But before we even get started into this seriously fascinating story, I don't know why it's more popular because your jaw is going to drop. But before we even start, let's bring in my special co-host, Jimmy Church. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hey.
How are you doing? And I also...
How is everybody?
Yeah, how's everyone doing in the live chat? I want to say hi to all my moderators, everyone that's just making it all lively up in there. How's everyone doing?
Welcome, everybody. Thank you, Christina, for the invite. This is a fascinating, fascinating case. We'll get into that in a second. Right before the show, it's like 90 seconds, and Christina's just putting the pressure on me. And I'm trying to figure out how to do the chat. How do I log in? She says, you can't. What do you mean I can't? No, you've got to go to YouTube. You got to log. You can do that. I said, wait. She goes, we got 30 seconds. I'm like, dude, no chat today. But so that's what we write up to showtime. So anyway, she goes, you're stressing me out. You're stressing me out, man. But it's all good. Let me ask you this, Christine, and welcome to everybody. We skipped a week.
Yeah, we did. It's been crazy for everyone.
Yeah, it's been really crazy. Crazy for you, crazy for myself, and a lot of things going on. If we catch up to any of that at the end of the show today, we can chat about all the other stuff that's going on. But I'm going to start here. How did you find this case?
I just got lucky. I just stumbled upon it and I just vaguely read it. I'm thinking this is going to be the next episode. And I just dove into it, reading books, watching the documentaries I get my hands on, reading witness accounts, and of course, jumping on over to the Black Vault to read what John Greenwald had on it as well. So the link is below for those that do want to read the documents that he has.
And that's fantastic because I agree with you. This is a case that deserves a lot more attention. You know, it goes back to 1977, but I have been looking into this case now for probably the better part of, this is 2021. So I'm going to say 30 years that I've been looking into it. And I remember when I first started to do the deep dive, I thought, holy crap, everybody was in on this case. Everything. You've got, you know, the village, the local government, the military, the Air Force, researchers converging on the town. You've got deaths. People were killed, injured. You've got laser guns. I mean, you've got everything. You've got flying Winnebagos, you know, and orbs and things in the water. And this went on for quite a while with all kinds of witnesses and victims and families. And it's just a wild and crazy documented case. It's fantastic.
It is. And if for those that have a favorite alien movie, this story is going to blow it out of the water because it's true. Allegedly it's true. And it really did happen for about, 6,000 townsmen in the town of Colores.
Yes.
So yeah. You have many witnesses.
There are, before we jump into the details of the case, what I remember doing is... Now we're going back 30 years. I've researched this case a lot over the years, and I hear references to it. Of course, James Fox is down there right now with Virginia. He's doing his new documentary in Brazil, and there are similarities in that case that is the subject of his new documentary, and this case and other cases in Brazil that were going on. Up and down the coast in these small villages where eventually the military shows up and shoots videos and investigates and infiltrates these towns for an extended period of time. But all of this was going on. And so when I started to do the research for this, I remember, again, this is going back a few years, a while, but that this took place on an island. And I remember going and trying to find an island called Colores, and I couldn't. But where the town is, there are islands around it, which obviously there's fishing villages. And I lived down in Central America for a while. Yeah, there it is right there. And you have these islands that are off the coast in South America, in the Caribbean, and Central America. Some of them are named, some aren't, but they're habitated. You know, people live there, people fish from there, and there's fishing villages. And I've often wondered if there is a connection with the islands and the contact that was going on, and not necessarily from inland, right? From the Brazil side of the continent side, and not necessarily the island. So that's another aspect of this case that I've always found really, really fascinating, the island connection.
Which it seems kind of bizarre because this is a kind of a repetitive pattern amongst many UFO flaps or just one encounters are kind of near the water in some respects. But let's just kind of dive into the story on what happened. Like, what's it about? Do you want to tell the story or do you want me to tell it?
You know what? My version's going to be colorful, exaggerated, and full of innuendo. You're going to be straight down the middle facts. So... let's go with your factual side, and then I'll do the color commentary.
All right, I love it. So I will just go with the bullet points, and we'll make it real simple. So this happened for about 6 months in Brazil in 1977. And I have not heard another story that lasts that long, UFO sightings being seen every single night. It wasn't just like sparse here and there. It was consistent. And many witnesses said it happened about every night between 7 and 8 p.m. for 6 months, give or take. And what happened was these people that were just casually outside or even in their home would see incredibly bright lights that would penetrate through their roof, through their windows, through the walls, and it would practically burn their skin. But more than just burn it, it would add these kinds of puncture wounds in the skin. For females, mainly it was in the chest area, and for males, it was near the neck and jugular area. Of course, there were also places such as the thigh and the lower part of the leg, but for the majority of the people that were interviewed, which is about 3,000, give or take, and that was just by the military that interviewed about 3,000 people. We don't actually know about how many people were interviewed by journalists and by other people, but overall, from the data that was collected, the neck and the chest area were the most prevalent. And it wasn't just one puncture wound. It could have been easily two or three, along with burns that were somehow connected to radiation. Now, also with this, these people that were seeing these lights in the sky, it wasn't just one color. They were seeing yellow lights, green, and red. Some people believed that these lights were kind of like they were signaling either to the people on the ground or amongst the other ships that were in the same area as them. But of course, that is not fully explained or understood into why these crafts had multiple lights. All right, Jimmy, I'll leave it to you now.
And in case anybody has noticed, Christina is not with us on terra firma. She's orbiting the planet right now, looking down at Colores, Brazil, as we speak. And I'm drinking Mexican Coke, Hecho en Mexico.
There you go. What makes it different from, like, American Coke?
Sugar. Lots of it. Lots of real sugar. Okay. Yeah, I can't. American Coke.
Coke in general is
Well, not that. This is like being kissed by the baby Jesus.
So back to the story, Jimmy. I want to hear your version of it.
Okay. Let's get serious. This the original sightings kicked off. There was some other stuff with the local police. But the first things that kicked off with the locals there, the villagers, was in late November of 1977. And they ended up having, I went back and took some quick notes. But listen to this, everybody. The first observations, November 27th, and that's in 1977. Then November 28th, November 29th, November 30th, December 2nd, December 4th. Just like right in a row, rolling over into the new year. The military came in. The military had their own sightings. All of this continued. The military went back and wrote two versions of a report. One was 200 to 300 pages, and another version of that report was between 600 and 800 pages. Some of this has been available, and I have gone back over the years and read the translations of these reports. Absolutely fascinating. Jacques Vallée goes to Brazil. He heads straight there. He interviews a bunch of the villagers. Now, a couple of things that, and we'll get into this deeper, but immediately this is what stood out. They were reporting Winnebago shaped and sized objects. So long, rectangular. Now, when they say Winnebago, for some reason, they were thinking about campers or RVs. I don't know if there were, you know, windows or things, but something made them multiple times describe some of these objects like that. And they would come from inland and over the village with lights on them. Mm-hmm. Ginormous, rectangular, long objects in the sky. No wings, no propulsion. And then that was that. There was another set of observations from some of the local fishermen in the area. And one of them, I remember, there was like a lady that owned like a seaside bar. you know, something on the beach. And she said that her and her customers every night would go out and watch these blue lights come out over the ocean and then into the water and then back out again. And
so
they would watch this from the beach.
No way. So these witnesses and the woman that owned this bar, they weren't afraid like everyone else?
Everybody was freaked out. No, this was not. This is the thing about this case. And we talk about this all the time, benevolent, you know, kind, not so kind, ET contact. This was a situation where, and just imagine this and how afraid this village was, that these objects were coming over the village and shooting these beams of light, call it lasers, plasma, whatever you want, at individuals and burning them. This one witness says that she's in her house, in her living room. The lights come from outside. They know what's going on, right? They're back. This thing shot a beam through the ceiling into her chest, left a black circle on her chest this big with three puncture wounds in the middle and causing great pain. I mean, just imagine being burned, your skin being burned black. And this happened all over the village. Children, men, women, it didn't matter. Everybody is getting hit by these beams of light and getting burned out in the open, inside of homes. There was no protection. And Caloris was terrified. There was one of the things in Jacques Vallée's book, and I went and I took a note of this, and I remember reading this originally. Vallée said, with all of the interviews that he did, nobody got nauseous and nobody got diarrhea. That's in his notes. Now, that's interesting. His point for point, there was always a feeling of weakness. Some could barely walk after getting hit by these beams. Local losses of sensitivity, numbness, trembling. Their complexion would change and turn green and shades of gray. Anemia. Their blood and hemoglobin levels started to freak out.
Can I stop you right there? Can you go into a little bit more depth about that section, especially about the blood?
Yes, yes. And it's, for some reason, low arterial pressure, right, in different sections of the body. And was this related to the blackened skin? Is it related to some type of radiation and radiation poisoning and sickness from these lights? There was also reports. Now, there was the black circles, and then others had purple circles and red circles, again, with the puncture wounds. Everybody described when they got hit by these beams of light as hot, burning, hot, painful. 2 to 3 puncture marks. Then their hair started to fall out, right? Now, Jacques wrote in his book that not only was their hair falling out, but the hair follicles themselves, especially on the men, were completely destroyed. Now, you would relate that possibly to radiation, but yet nobody was getting sick or had diarrhea, which is the point that I made opening up with this.
Oh.
Yeah. Very, very strange stuff. Now, also, I want to back up for a second that in Jacques' book, he says it is in the islands around Belém where the waters of the Amazon majestically come to meet the ocean 1 degree south of the equator. And again, references to the islands. And if you go, my original investigation on this case was that this was an island, and it was an island called Caloris. I went earlier this week after I knew we were going to do the show about it. I was so excited. And I remembered that. So I went and Googled. So for those of you out there that are going to research, and you're going to go and Google, that's fine. Go and Google Kolaris. You're not going to find a Kolaris Island. At least I haven't been able to. Maybe there's a smaller one that is locally called that, and it isn't, you know, part of the historical record geographically. I don't know. But all of your investigations should involve just the town.
I agree with that. And back to some of the symptoms, not just symptoms, but like what happened. One thing that I found really interesting, what I was reading, was the local residents called these lights during this time called chupa chupa, which literally means sucker, sucker, because they believed that when they were getting punctured, that these entities were taking their blood. However, there was no real proof into if that was the case or not. One book I did read was by Bob Pratt. Yep. And he had done an interview with multiple witnesses in Brazil. And he asked one woman, well, what gave it away to the fact that you believe that the blood was being taken out of your body? And she did not give a well enough explanation to why she believed that. But throughout the entire town, overall, they believed that these entities were taking their blood. And one doctor by the name of Carvalho, I don't know if I'm saying that right. I hope I am. Yep, she was one of the main doctors in this small town working in a clinic. She encountered practically the majority of the witnesses that had these encounters with these entities. And when she did blood tests on the people that had these puncture wounds, they had very low levels of hemoglobin. And I had to research, you know, what's important about hemoglobin in the blood. I was a bit confused. And what it is, for those that might not know, it transfers oxygen through the body. Like it's an element, not an element, but you know what I mean. And it allows oxygen to be flowing through the blood. And my question is, I don't know if you know this, but my question would be, why would there be low levels of hemoglobin in the blood after these encounters?
Yeah, and it happened over and over again. And Dr. Cavallo, I think that's his name, Dr. Cavallo gave Jacques Vallée his patient's records. And Jacques writes about this in the book. It's all very similar, you know, straight down the line. And one of them was, Carvalho. That's it. I said Cavallo. It's Carvalho. At Kolaris Hospital. 24 years old. Well, this was 1977. I don't think he's 24 today.
No, it's a she. And she was 24 at the time that this happened. And I think that's incredibly young to have these kinds of encounters and have no idea what's going on. So I feel kind of bad for her at the time.
It's a crazy case. And just imagine the panic, knowing that if you walked outside, you could get, you know, hit in the back of the head with some kind of laser weapon. It's going to burn. The other part, and I think we all should understand this, well, we're talking about blood and the concerns of blood levels and pressures and hemoglobin. There were puncture wounds involved with these laser hits. I'm saying laser. They you know, the villagers didn't use the word laser. They always said beams of light. And, you know, coming from these craft. The beams of light and these burns would be 1 inch, 2 inch. The larger black ones were 2 to 3 inches in diameter. That's a concentrated beam. In that, if you have a flashlight, a headlight on a car, it spreads apart, right? Okay, so by the time it gets you, your whole body's illuminated. You're not going to have, you know, something like this. So that's a concentrated, focused beam of light, beam of energy, I should say. But there were puncture wounds. So we are thinking, this is what I've always thought over the years. I think it was a strange technology. Do I think that these lasers had needles in them or somehow, you know, coming down and puncturing the skin. I don't. No. I think that the inside that beam of light was another, you know, a very focused, fine laser there doing some kind of entrance into the body.
Interesting.
And yes. And I think that's what was going on, straight into the bloodstream, which was causing these issues with blood levels and pressure and everything else. Now, does that sound crazy? Sure, it does. But there were thousands of people that went through this. Now, the next point, somewhere in Brazil, inside of the Brazilian military, there is film, there is video, there is documentation, there are reports, there are witnesses that went up and down the coast, not only here, but in all kinds of other cities. Now, I want you to listen to this. This is directly from Jacques Vallée's book. He says, ground truth. There was no denying the wave of 1977. It started in June near Cape Gurupi, north of the town of Viseu, and it moved in both directions along the coast, towards São Luís to the east and toward Belém to the west. During June and July, it reached a peak in September and October. The Brazilian military was all over this, and the Air Force up and down the coast dealing with this in multiple towns. And what went down specifically in November of 1977, when we collectively interview all of these witnesses in Colares, was some type of invasion. You know, there was something going on, and the Brazilian military didn't know what to do. I went and did in 1977, the Brazilian military, and this is no joke, virtually occupied many of these towns, came in, set up camp, troops, equipment, tents, and sat out there with video and film cameras all day and all night for 6 months. And this is the other thing. It ended nearly as quickly as it started. It was like one day the Brazilian military is gone. It's packed up and split. And the villagers are like, well, can we get some help here? You know, what did you conclude? What is it? And it was virtual silence after that. Just an incredible case. Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. They just snapped their fingers and the military was gone. But before they left, they collected about 500 pictures, 3,000 witness accounts, 15 hours of film, and over 2,000 files were accumulated. Now, and I think it was in 2003 or 2005, some of it was released to the public, but not all of that information. And someone just asked, did you read the book UFO Danger Zone? I did. I loved it.
Good book.
And that one specific chapter, I think it was chapter 20 something, on this case specifically, I devoured it. I loved it so much.
It was one of those things with me. I remember I saw a couple, this goes back a long ways, everyone, but I caught a couple of, I'm investigating the case and suddenly I see it on TV. And then I see another segment on another TV show, and I'm like, what is it about this case? And I went back and I jumped back into it, and it was very visible there for a minute. And for some reason, it has been silenced. I think this is something that hopefully today, us discussing it, is going to cause so many to go out there and do the deep dive. I want to swing back here to this, which is this. Again, this is from Jacques Vallée. He says, the reason the phenomenon could not be denied was very simple. Every evening, UFOs appeared coming from the north. Okay. Now you've got to look and see where Colares is and where it is on that part of the coast. But the coastline heads up and goes west. Yes. Okay. And you see, if you back up, there you go. You're very close to the top, the north side of Brazil. You have French Guyana, right? There's Venezuela. But you see that jetty up the coast right there and how it goes north? That's what we're talking about here. Very interesting point, because after that, it's east-west. And also, if you go directly north, you're over the water, right? Okay, you're over the Atlantic. So, coming from the north, in some cases, they flew down from the sky. In others, they emerged out of the ocean. I saw a photograph of an object with a luminous white ring flying right out of the brackish water at dusk. This is Jacques Vallée. They came over the islands at low altitude and circled. They descended as if to land. They made loops and accelerated suddenly. They hovered over houses and probed inside with beams. They even emerged out of larger objects and then re-entered them. And this happened on schedule every evening for 3 months. Now, can you imagine how terrified you would be in this village? You know, you've got no defenses, you've got no nothing, and you're running down the street being chased by, right?
Yeah,
right?
No, it's awful. And I was reading stories that people pulled out their guns and tried to shoot the lights. And I'm thinking, yeah, good luck with that. I'm really sorry.
The other stuff that was involved with this, because I talked about the blue orbs. You know, we always talk about orbs. There was an investigation by the military into ball lightning. Was that part of it? Was this something that was being shot out of the craft? The websites that had surfaced. I don't think there's any websites out there now. I should go and look. And if anybody finds a Kolaris website, send it to me. I would like to go back, and maybe it's part of the Wayback Machine. And those older sites were golden. In 1995, 96, 97, there were specific websites that were dealing with this case, and there was a lot of information there.
So here's this. You can see, let me zoom in like this. You can see it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Spaghetti Lee, thank you so much. He says, hi, Christina and Jimmy. Thanks for your hard work. Oh, we love this. We love doing this, right, Jimmy?
Yes, and I enjoy this so much. This case is crazy, everyone, and I know you're hearing my enthusiasm. When you jump into this and you start reading, there's a lot of data out there, but you always come back to the same conclusion. It's like, man, don't leave the house, right? Don't walk down the street.
Right.
You've got flying Winnebagos with tractor beams on it, shooting people in the head. There's two books, Jacques Vallée's Confrontation, and of course, Bob Pratt's fabulous book, UFO Danger Zone, Terror and Death in Brazil. So, those are the two books, that I remember reading, about this case many years ago. Fantastic books.
Oh, without a doubt. For people that haven't read it, I recommend it. I personally have not read Jacques Vallée's. I will, now that you mentioned it. I have to read it. It's a must. But the Danger Zone book, it's so easy to read. It's very simple, but it hits all the points on this case and cases throughout Brazil. It's not just this tiny little location. It's all the cases. Something that I wanted to talk about on this specific case is, but before I do that, I should probably address this super chat by Felipe. Thank you so much for the super chat. I'm interested in, you know, all the Brazilian cases. So we'll do more shows on this case here at some point, along with Venezuela, you know, hometown. I would not really mind because I wasn't born there, but my mom was. Going to do a whole show on that as well. That's going to be awesome. But back to this, what I found really interesting and what you mentioned at the very beginning of this episode were there were certain deaths that happened because of this incident.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, First off, I want to, well, I can go back to that. Let me go back to my specific notes about this. But I just, somebody just sent me a link, and I'm over there now, and this is awesome. And I don't have a way to post this link. How do I get the link to you? How do I do this now? If I send you this link.
Okay, so on my side, there's going to be a private chat where you can put it in. But Zenza Bill did put up a link as well. Is that, if that's the same link as yours?
Let's see. I'm on, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. I am so confused right now. No, it looks like a different link.
Okay.
A different link.
So then the one that you have on your right is going to say private chat, and you can place it right in there, and I'll catch it and I'll share it.
Okay. Private chat. Where? Oh, private chat. Really? Oh, I've got a private. Nobody can see this?
No, just me.
And I can send. Look at that.
See, you should get StreamYard instead of using Skype.
Okay. Hold on. Watch Christine's face.
Okay, let's take a look at this. Oh, the drawings that the military officials drew. Oh,
private chat. The private chat.
Yeah. Oh.
Don't they want to know? Okay, but.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyways,
serious face back on. So, not that I know it's private. See, okay, so that's this is somebody just sent me this. I'm scrolling through it, and this is pretty excellent. And there is a link here. I don't want to get too far sideways. There is a link here for the report from the Brazilian military, mm-hmm. and down here the reports are available. Okay. All right, this is pretty cool. So that's the site or the.
I'll share it. I'll share it.
You share it. I can't do it.
I'm sharing, and now I'll share.
This. Now you're asking me about the deaths,
right? If you want to tell the story.
There. Let me go back to my notes.
And here's the document that Jimmy was talking about. Here is a drawing that was created by military officials, one of which we're going to be talking about today, the captain of the Project Saucer. And I'm excited to talk about that. But here's one of their drawings.
Yeah, yeah. Keep that up there. And can I expand this page? Let me see. Oh, I can. Okay. I just got rid of everybody else. I don't have... Yes, this is excellent. I'm glad you can do this. Okay. See, it's in Portuguese.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yes, it is. I don't speak Portuguese. My mom does, but she didn't pass that on to me.
Okay, and did you put this link up for everybody?
No, but I can do that right now. That's a good idea. Let's
put this link up. Sorry, everybody. This is happening in real time. This is live. This is what happens. But I'm very excited about this. So the two, okay. I wanted to get back to the deaths. Yeah, the full report is here. Check that out. Okay, so we've got scanned copies with translations. This is beautiful. Okay, so everybody can do a deep dive here. And then what was the other link? I wanted to look at this from Bill because Bill only posts the real stuff. Too many comments here. Too many comments. Where'd Bill's link go? I want to save this. This is how I research. And when Bill, where is your link? I don't see it.
It's right here. Right, it's right up for you right now.
Where?
Right in front of you.
Right. Oh. Yeah, but that's not clickable.
Okay, hold on. Let me try.
Okay, I swear, man. I swear.
I can't.
This was planned a little bit better. Bill had the link up though, and it's just weird when I scroll back. I don't see it. Bill, can you post it again? Quit goofing around. You see me struggling. You can be a good guy and just post the link and help a brother out. I'm going to tear Bill up tonight on the show.
He's a fantastic moderator, but while we're waiting for the link, so these deaths that happened with this incident, the doctor from the hospital, but I posted it for you.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. Yeah. So with this incident, the first woman that came into the clinic, the doctor said that she was completely stiff. You know, her jaw was locked, her eyes were shut, and it seems like she was going into cardiac arrest. They couldn't do anything for her, for this witness at the time. So they took her to another hospital in the nearby town, right? She stayed there for the time being.
Right.
Then I think a day or sometime after, another person comes in, this time that is a male, and he is again completely stiff. He cannot move. He's practically in shutdown mode. And it had very similar symptoms as the first woman. So that man was also driven to the nearby town with the more professional hospital. Within 5 days, both those people died. Then the doctor asked for the documents from that hospital and said, well, what's the cause of death? And when she received the paperwork, it said that the cause of death was unknown. However, there were some nurses in the hospital in the nearby town believed it to be some kind of radiation poisoning, but there wasn't enough evidence to support their claims.
It says here, Jimmy's getting schooled on YouTube.
Yeah, okay. It's a learning curve.
Yeah, Carl's still upset because I owe him $9. Carl, I'll send you your $9, man. Love Carl. Carl's the best. So this sets the tone, though. I actually, and thank you, Bill, for this link. And here's one little blurb here, and it's the title is "Murky and Deadly Beginnings." And it says, the bizarre encounter of Benedito Campos and Sylvia Marie from late October 1977. It says, we're not going to go into depth here, only briefly mention the specifics of the incident, where that evening, late on the 29th of October, as the husband and his pregnant wife relaxed in their living room. Okay? It says here they were watching TMZ. It says, following the sudden arrival of a disc-like craft outside of their window, a green laser surged through the window, paralyzing the pair. Two strange entities would then enter their property. Only an alert neighbor saved the couple from further incident when he chased the creatures away with his shotgun. Incidentally, both would recover, but Benedito would suffer with strange bouts of depression for weeks. And now the other part, I brought this up at the beginning. The reason why this case is so well researched and so many things happened, photographs, witnesses, reports, video, film. There were a lot of UFO researchers in Brazil at the time, still are. But they converged on this town, and they made this case very visible. And while this is going on, in the previous couple of months, this was happening up and down the coast. There was another larger town south of Colores. The name escapes me right now. The military's already there, right? They're already there. They've already moved into town. Crazy stuff is going on there. And when this kicked off in Colores, there were already UFO researchers there in town, walking around interviewing people, and news travels fast. And then the military moved in. It is one of the reasons why these cases in all of these towns and villages are so well documented. And it forced the Brazilian military, specifically the Air Force, to respond. Also, I want to say this. When I say the Air Force and the military, they had ground troops All right. So the Air Force is there, obviously, and they've got aircraft and pilots, and they're doing what they can. In the meantime, the Brazilian military and the ground forces moved in with scientists, equipment, and videotape, where they were literally different video crews were positioned on islands, on beaches, in town, 24 hours a day, filming and shooting. You mentioned earlier, you said 15 hours of
yeah.
film and video. No, more like 15 months.
Dang.
I'm not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. Well,
what is
this all day long?
But also what some of the locals said when the military did come in, the Air Force, they said that their weapons, the military weapons to protect the people, were their cameras and their recording equipment, because these people didn't really bring any weapons to actually protect the people, at least as the locals believed. But I want to take a really quick break. I want to answer a super chat when we get back. But this is History with the Mystery. I'm with Jimmy Church from the awesome Fade to Black show, which airs at 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Thursday, where he interviews awesome guests. And it is on YouTube as well as KGRA Radio and a bunch of other platforms. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Micah Hanks, and let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber, and here's why you should too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation, and all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina. Become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
Now, Charles has a question. Thank you so much. And it says, do you think this behavior follows observed patterns of human behavior or observed patterns of NHI? Which do you think is most likely in this case?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
I mean, I would think that when you have upwards around 9 out of 10 people living in your village of 5,000, right? 9 out of 10 children, men, women, adults, the elder, every 9 out of 10 are being affected by this, experienced by this, being shot by this, a death of a relative, your mom is, you know, been zapped by a laser and her hair is falling out. I would think that any type of crazy ass human behavior is acceptable. I can't imagine how terrified the people are. The other night, okay, can I share something with you guys?
Please do.
The other night, I'm in bed. I'm alone. And I was falling asleep. And I heard, now I just listen, it's not that big of a deal, but it turned out to be kind of a big deal. I heard like a knock on the side of my house, and I thought that that was strange. This is about 1 o'clock in the morning. And that kind of stirred me back out of, and I was like, man, I was falling asleep. And then I closed my eyes, and then I heard mom, right? Female voice that came from the other direction. The knocks were from over here. My eyes popped open and I sat up in bed and I was like, I heard that. Now, back to my point, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. That point doesn't matter. I was freaked out. I was scared. I was terrified. And I couldn't get back to sleep, and it didn't happen again. And of course I'm convincing myself that it was my dream or whatever, which it was, it probably was. Okay. All right. It wasn't some, but anyway, the point is once you're adrenaline, once you are scared, there's no turning back. You can't convince yourself that everything is just okay. And when this is going down in this village, right? Like that, at that level, that terror, that fear, it didn't go away in a day. It continued because other events were happening. People were being injured, and everybody in that town of 5,000, 6,000, 9 out of 10 had an experience, had a story, and this went on night after night after night after night. I can't imagine what we would classify as normal or abnormal or strange human behavior. I don't know, but they had to have been freaked out. If I'm freaked out over mom, I don't know what's going to happen to me when I get hit in the back by a laser. I'm not in any way. Think about that for a second. You know, think about that moment that you were scared, like really often scared, right? Now have that continue 24 hours a day for 3 months. That same feeling, that same anxiety.
It make you age in a day. I'll tell you that. All that stress. No, thank you. Charles says, I'm asking about the behavior of the craft, alluding to who could be the pilots, not the people's response to being shot with lasers.
Who cares about the dudes in the craft, Charles? I'm talking about women and children in fear. And he wants to know about pilots.
Well, there's actually an account of two different people that encountered the beings inside of the craft.
Yes.
One of them being the very famous captain who was operating this whole project. And his name is escaping me right now. It's like, Hollanda. Okay. So Captain Hollanda, after he retired from the Air Force, he went ahead and wanted to tell a story to the UFO magazine in Brazil. He's like, I cannot die with this truth. I need to go ahead and tell the story. So he says he had multiple encounters. He had three in total. So he says, but one of them, he was so frightened by this one specific story. And it says here that he was visited by a humanoid from a ship while he was in bed. There was a really powerful flash, and then there was this being right behind him, and it was hugging him really, really tight. He was about a meter and a half tall, which is about 3 to 4 feet, wearing a spacesuit, but it was kind of soft looking and not tight. And especially when you're that close to an entity, you can definitely tell the material. Okay. He was wearing a mask that was lead gray, so he wasn't able to see the eyes or the shape of the eyes. Then the alien spoke to the captain. He was frightened because this entity was hugging and squeezing this poor man. Actually, the captain, I guess he's not. He can do karate chops.
Right.
But this entity said in the captain's ear in Portuguese that sounded very metallic and almost robotic. And it said, take it easy. We're not going to do you any harm. And then it left. We've heard countless stories of entities interacting with humans, but in a lot of cases, it is telepathic. In a lot of cases that we've heard, these higher beings in some respects, or I guess grays, maybe not grays, but other beings, usually talk telepathically. In this case, it was verbal, but it sounded incredibly robotic. So could these entities be inorganic, or were these drones working for a different entity?
Yeah,
that was interesting.
Yeah. And there, and thank you for that. And as you were relating that experience, something popped in my head, and we often mention, and I understand why, that the UFO subject and ET and contact and disclosure, a lot of the time it seems like it's a United States thing. It's an American thing. And clearly it is not. But that being said, what I'm trying to say here is I went through a phase where I thought that all the good stuff and all the real stuff was happening in Brazil, was happening in Chile, was happening in Argentina, was happening in Peru. And the encounters, these things, especially in Brazil, up and down the coast, was not only very frequent, but we weren't getting these same types of contact and these types of reports inside of the United States. Down in Brazil, for some reason, especially now, this continues up to the up to today, and what James Fox is working on right now, this is more recent. You know, this is a lot more current, but we're talking about civilians in the military about direct ET contact with, you know, where these beings are getting off of these craft and confronting people. And we don't have, and this is a mass sighting. This is an entire town, an entire village. And we don't have that in the United States. So when we say, I mean, at least that I, you know, maybe these reports are being squashed, but down in Brazil, the civilians and the military don't seem to have an issue of telling it exactly like it is. And so it's not just a United States thing. And if you want some extraordinary cases, look at like Colares and Varginha and Varginha and what is going on down in Brazil. It's insane. It's extraordinarily cool.
It is. It absolutely is. And I'm gonna hold the thought that I have. But Sterilock 2.0 says, I'm Brazilian and I've been to Colares twice. Even today, there are reports of lights, but obviously with a much lower frequency. I like that comment because it seems, and I've read accounts of things still happening years after that incident in 1977 to 1978. Now, one thing that you mentioned, while we're on the topic of the military, when the military infiltrated Colares during this time, when asked by the mayor of the town to come in and pacify all the people from their mass hysteria, they went over and they walked over to the doctor from the clinic and they said, we want you to tell everyone that the people that have been in your clinic are suffering from mass hysteria. And that's it. Nothing else happened, and leave it at that.
I'm going to go back and just the mass hysteria. And I keep going back to, you know, being, you know, your friends, your neighbors, the town, everybody, you know, gripped in fear. Right. Well, and listen to this. One of the most brutal encounters took place in mid-July. One evening, a farm worker, Alfredo Marquez Soares, was walking to his friend's house nearby when he felt a sudden pain on the back of his leg. He turned around and immediately noticed a glowing yellow-white object. He felt a pulling sensation and at the same time realized he couldn't move his leg. Alfredo would cling to the post of a fence nearby where he stood. All the while, in other words, he's being pulled. He's hanging on, right? Okay. Waves of intense heat, then cold, then heat again would wash over him as if emulating from the strange craft. The light was also so intense that for the most part, he would keep his eyes completely shut or he would be blinded. Then the craft's grip, this is where it gets crazy, appeared to loosen a little. Almost instinctively, he let go of the post and ran, his leg in pain, but under his control. He would take shelter under a cashew tree and watched as the strange object ascended high into the sky and disappeared. Deciding to cancel his trip, he would head back home to properly examine his leg. When he did so, he was shocked to see it was bruised in the extreme. In fact, his leg was almost black, as if completely burnt. The following day, his leg got worse, full of blisters and apparent fast-developing infections. Furthermore, he was racked with intense stomach and back pains, and for several days, he would suffer from intense diarrhea. Oh, there you go. Although he would eventually recover, he would require crutches to walk for almost 3 months following the incident. Now, this is going on in the village, right? And you've got friends and neighbors and things with this going on, you're going to be terrified. It is going to be traumatic. And you're living in fear. I just can't imagine. I really can't. I have no idea what the intentions were and what was going on. The puncture holes and the very specific areas, was it medical? Was it some kind of research? It's almost like the herding of animals, like crowd control, right? You know what I mean? And to affect everybody psychologically. It's a very, very, very interesting case.
It is. And I don't know how you could sweep it under the rug by saying it's mass hysteria. I can't comprehend it. And at first, the doctor did believe it to be so. But after like her fifth or sixth case, because she had about 30 or 40 patients enter her clinic, she was like, there's no way. It's simply not possible. Oh my gosh. There is, we're almost done with today's show. This hour literally flew by incredibly quickly.
That was an hour?
I know, but you know what? Let's let it go a little bit longer. You know what? We haven't even covered everything yet. Make it go a little bit longer.
There were some alien abductions involved in this case too as well.
Oh, please. Please enlighten me.
But let's continue. Remember, Christina, and the rest of you guys, I know you're having a great time. This is awesome. I love talking about this. I've got a show tonight. Now I've got, man, it's a long day. Oh, what a day I have had. This is so much fun. UFOs are my life. But perhaps accounts even less spoken of are those of alien abduction that would take place within the chaos of the wave of encounters. At 1 a.m. in the early hours of the 10th of July, 1977, Jose Benedito Bogea would set off from his house in order to catch a bus. Before he even reached the bus stop, however, his evening would take a drastic turn. As he was walking along a path, he noticed a brightly glowing blue-green object hovering in the middle of the road in front of him. I remember hearing about this many years ago. It's crazy. Bogea watched the glowing object for several seconds before a strange beam of light emerged in his direction. The next thing he knew, he was in a strange room, right? All around him were several small creatures apparently going about their business. Then several of these creatures grabbed him and moved him to another strange destination. Before he knew what was happening, however, he was waking up laying on the ground. It was morning around 8:30 a.m., several miles away in another town, São Luís. He had an intense pain running down the right side of his body. However, he would slowly make his way back home. So, it's like terrorist activity, terrorist activity. In a town, everybody was affected. I mean, I know I just said 9 out of 10 people, but I know that my research over the years had always said, 90-95%, almost 100% of everybody in the town was affected. Everybody.
And it just makes you believe that if humans can do it, why can't aliens do it as well, right? Why can't they be just as vicious as humans are?
I wonder if the NHI would smoke a blunt. Charles, he had such a great question about non-human entities earlier, and then he brings up the smoking of the blunt.
There is another encounter of a woman who also interacted with these beings. Now, I was only able to find two stories. I don't know if you had more of where people talk about actually being face to face with these beings, but this one came from the woman called Claudio Mira from the book by Bob Pratt. And she had a very close encounter with these beings. She was sleeping at her friend's house in a hammock when she was awoken by a bright green light that entered from the window and touched her face. And then the green light changed color and it turned red as if you put your hand over a flashlight. I have not heard that before, where lights change color like that in an instant by one craft. Okay. But then she then states that she could see a person coming in through the room, but only about the chest up, because these beings are pretty small. So she says, I thought it was a man, but it had on like a kind of diving suit. I saw the face of the man.
I remember this case. I remember her case. Okay. Oh, hold on. Let's back up for a second. And I was remembering it when you said the red light. But yeah, that's right. The suit. She was woken up because the light was burning her face. That's what made her wake up. And then her face felt warm and flushed. She wakes up and this light changes colors, turn red. It's on her face and she snaps to and then looks forward. And there's a dude.
There's a dude.
In a suit in her living room. I remember that. Man, there's so many years.
Yeah, kind of like a diving suit. And she says that I saw the face of the man and his eyes were very small. He had an instrument like a pistol. He pointed the weapon at me and shined the beam 3 times, hitting me in the chest all 3 times, almost in the exact same place. It was very hot. And I think even that they took blood from my chest. The burns left 3 little pinpoint scars and a triangle on the upper right side of the chest. And then she also stated that from those 3 puncture wounds, she also bled from them.
Now, this was, I'm going back now to my youth. I think this was the first case I heard from the village, was this case. And that's why I remember it so well. It had all of the elements in it. It had the blood. It had the puncture wounds. It had the heat ray. It had the ET guy in a spacesuit acting robotically. I remember. I think this was the first case that I read about so many years ago, and I've just never forgotten it.
It's going to stick with you. I mean, that's a pretty intense story. And again, we've heard countless stories of people interacting with extraterrestrials, abductions, possible placing probes inside of them. But one like this, it really stands out. It really, really stands out. There aren't many stories of a person seeing an extraterrestrial actually have a pistol and have it shot at them, at least not consciously.
Okay, here we go. Kind of close out with this. Well, we don't have to close out. I don't want to freak Christina out. She's like, what do you mean? We're not ending it. No, we're not. We're not. But
do my eyes get that big? Keep like puppy eyes.
I was just looking at Deb's comment here. Yeah, it's always about weed when Jimmy's on the show. I don't even smoke pot. I don't know why everybody makes the connection, because I have a Panama tattoo. And Christina doesn't even know what Panama means when it comes to red. Do you understand what I just said?
I thought Panama was a country. What are you talking about?
That's what I'm talking about. The youth today, they don't connect me with weed. How does it? Okay. Anyway, back to the military. Such was the activity taking place by late October 1977. The Brazilian Air Force would install the Regional Air Command, COMAR, Comando Aéreo Regional, on the island. Again, the island reference. And I said this early on coming into the show. My memory was that the Brazilian Air Force was on land, was on the islands, and they were filming. Anyway, let me get back to this. On the island, and what's more, they would soon put into action Operation Plate. That's what this was called, okay? Plato. The person in charge of directing the military's research was Captain Urangi Bolivier Soares. The dude has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 names in his name.
Pretty common.
Let's call him L. Yeah. Their presence would, at least in part, prove to be a great benefit to the residents of Kolaris Islands. Of the Kolaris Islands, plural. Okay, that goes back to my whole memory. It's not that bad, is it? It's coming back.
It's pretty good.
They would, for example, offer psychological assistance to those suffering from the after effects of the sightings and the encounters. They would also, and perhaps more importantly to UFO research, obtain hundreds of pictures of these strange craft, as well as four separate video films of strange activity. They would, according to locals in the region, place several technical devices along the beachfront. And that was the other thing I remember nearly firsthand from so many years ago. They were camped out on the beaches. They were in town. They had different groups of different teams of videographers film to, I would assume 1977, probably film, more film than video. Video was very expensive back then. But on the islands and in town, this was all going on at the same time. And so to make a reference here, this is kind of funny, right? Four separate video films. The military was there for months and months and months. There wasn't four videos shot. Okay, there were just, I'm telling you, thousands and thousands of hours.
Without a doubt.
The military personnel were shocked at the bizarre showings. For example, reports would marvel about how the brightness of the lights would be more akin to illuminations at major sporting events. They would also state, the military, that these lights were always sharply defined. Remember what I mentioned earlier, and directed with perfect precision towards any target. In fact, even the military's own helicopters were subject to these bizarre lights. On one occasion, a military helicopter was forced to the ground. There was no official explanation available, but one local resident, though, Alba Kamara, claimed that to have witnessed the incident, she would claim to have noticed a strange craft in the sky, round and luminous. Moments later, the military helicopter approached it, and she would continue. She says, quote, "Then we saw the UFO direct a very powerful beam on the helicopter, forcing it to land on São Pedro Airfield." Crazy.
At least it landed and not crashed.
Even the military was terrified.
Oh, I would be.
Yeah. Oh, man, look at these photographs. See, now, here, this is that lady that we were talking about earlier, Claudio Mira. Look at those photographs of her skin, and you can see the burn mark, the circle, and the punctures in the middle.
Are you sharing your screen?
No. Can I?
Yeah, you can share your screen. And I would like to address, at the bottom of StreamYard, there's going to say share. It's going to have a little laptop with the plus sign.
Okay. Share screen.
Right. And it's going to give you options to share like your desktop, to share a tab.
Did it work?
I see it.
Ah, there it is. How'd you do that? Did I do that?
Yeah.
Wow, man. But yeah, look, there she is.
So I have that picture as well. If you want, can you zoom it in, people to see?
How do I zoom?
Okay, I'll do it.
Oh, hold on.
I'll do it. Hold on. Oh no. Oh God. One sec. There it is. So here's how it looks. But I would quickly like to address the super chats. And I want to say thank you so much to Jason Frey. Says, fantastic episode today, an ordered UFO danger zone. Love Jimmy on the show. Then where's Jimmy? I lost him. Sorry. Then from Carl, it says, great show, Christina and Jimmy. Thank you so much, everyone that's supporting the channel. I incredibly appreciate it. And John Music, good to see you. He says, abductions and missing people and genetic manipulation needs to get talked about in the mainstream media. Do you guys agree? Thoughts? Also,
what's going on with this 40 minutes video we're hearing about now?
Okay, I don't see these questions.
Here's this one. And, you know, John, to answer your question about genetic manipulation, not really related to the UFO topic, but I actually just dropped a video for the debrief talking about bringing woolly mammoths practically back from the dead using genetic manipulation. So there are these scientists that are Texas-based on a project called Colossal, and they have these genomes to be able to recreate the woolly mammoth and put it back on Earth. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's CRISPR technology. Snip, snip.
It is CRISPR technology, and that is also mentioned in the video. And then Charles says, thank you so much, says, does anyone know which RF the Italians told Lou in Unidentified could be used to attract UAP? Rumor is it's 144.100. Need to get the info out of Lou.
Oh, what do you want me to do? Text him?
Yeah. Oh, man. And off he goes. To the super, super special phone. But if you don't want to do it, I could do it.
What's up with this 144.1 radio frequency everybody seems to be yapping about? ? That's how you do it. That's how you talk to the man. You just go just straight there. The rumors about these videos floating around, and yes, I've heard the same thing. There are so many, and this is, look, when it comes to the UFO subject in ET, UAPs, however you want to frame it, there has been chatter about very specific things for decades. Very, very specific. Today it's a 23-minute video, and it's not 23 minutes, by the way.
Right.
I know the exact time. So if anybody says they've seen the 23-minute video, tell me how long it is.
23 minutes.
Tell me how long it is. Because if you don't, you haven't seen it. All right. Now, this 40-minute video, I don't know. All of this stuff that includes the black triangle coming out of the water and anything else that you want to talk about that are rumored to be out there, until it is out in the public and it is seen, it's vaporware.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist until it's there. Is it fun to talk about? Sure. If I even think about how much sleep I've lost and laid awake at night thinking about this stuff and what does it look like and chasing it down and going to this, and, you know, and have you seen it? You know, no, but I know a guy that knows a guy, you know, it's just when it surfaces, great. I can start a rumor anytime. I could go on Twitter right now.
But don't.
Have you guys heard about the 17-minute video? And then it's off to the races. It's off to the races. That's all you got to say. Have you heard about it, man? Have you heard about it? It's going to UAPTF 17-minute video. And right now, I just said this live on the air. Hey, thank you, Jack D. Frost.
Thank you so much. Says, thank you for this episode, and please do more interviews with Jimmy in the future. Well, you know, he's here whenever he can be on Tuesdays. So you got to talk to the man for this one.
I'm here for you, Christine. I'm here for you only because
you love the topics, you love right?
Playing guitar. That's the only reason why I'm here, folks. So she can see the guitar, you know, and
this is true. This is true from the one time I commented that my favorite one was the fire one. But actually, my new favorite one is the one that you posted on Twitter with the dragons. That one's my new favorite.
With the dragons? What do I have with dragons on it?
You posted it on Twitter. It's black and slick. Oh, has, like, carvings.
That was somebody else.
Oh, well, okay, I take it back.
That was somebody else. I got a tiger. I don't have any rat.
All right. Well, I guess I'll say that for another day, but we're going to wrap up the show now. It's been a beautiful hour and 20 minutes long. And if you want to keep watching great content, head on over to Michael Mattaluni's Singularity Lab channel, which is going to be starting in about 10 minutes. I always want to thank my friend Jimmy for giving his awesome insights and knowledge in the case of Colores and everything in between, because it is incredibly amazing case, and I'm so happy we're able to talk about it, because I didn't know about it before doing the research, and now that I do, I feel incredibly ignorant for never talking about it in the past. Jimmy, what time is your show today, and who is your extra special guest?
Oh, tonight I have Michael Avon Oeming, probably I would say that most consider Michael to be the greatest, if not one of the greatest, comic illustrators in the world.
Oh.
And when you see all those drawings of me, you know, in different parts, that's all Michael. And his work over the years, he did the Powers TV series too, as well. Just absolutely incredible. So he's got, along with James Tynion and the fourth, who is one of the greatest writers in the world, comic book writers. I think James just left. Are you ready? He just left Batman to do this new comic graphic novel series, and it's called Blue Book. And the first chapter of this series is Betty and Barney Hill. And that is out. If you guys head over to my Twitter, my social media, I posted up the links where you can go and read everything right now for free. You can go and check it out in advance of the show tonight. But these two guys, Michael and James, are two of the absolute very best. You know, you go to Comic-Con, right? These are the cats, right? These are the dudes.
These are the cats.
And No exaggeration, but have you seen my the banner, the thing with me standing in front of the robot? That's, yeah, Michael Oeming. He drew that. And so anyway, aside from that, these two are so well researched when it comes to conspiracy, UFOs, ET, contact, lost history. Going all the way, these guys have a firm grip on everything that you and I talk about and what this audience enjoys. But they have an ability to get this out to the masses and beyond. You know, we have our UFO world, right? Our UFO community, and it's great. And I love it here. There is another world out there, right? We talk about these, you know, UFO conventions and things, you know, with 1,000 people, 500 people, 2,000 people, 3,000 people. We get excited about that. Go to Comic-Con in San Diego, right? With 175,000, right? It's a whole different thing. And that's the world that these guys rule. And right now, their new graphic novel series is friggin' called Blue Book. How cool is that? So that's who's on the show tonight. Tomorrow night, Richard Dolan is back. There's some more controversy around, again, the Wilson Davis document, the Wilson doc. So tomorrow night, we're going to do a little bit of a historical perspective on the Wilson Davis doc. And we're going to go, Richard's going to give his side, and I'm going to do a little devil's advocate. And I'm going to be on the other side of the fence, pushing back at Richard, and he's going to push back at me, and we're going to do this as gentlemen and see what we can do. And I've called tomorrow night's show, The Wilson Doc, The Final Cut.
Ooh.
So there you go. All right, Christina, thank you so much. I had so much fun. You guys are the absolute best. Jack D. Frost. If that's not the coolest name in the UFO community, I don't know. Spaghetti Lee.
It's a pretty cool name.
yeah, is pretty.
And the profile picture has to be one of my favorites.
For Spaghetti Lee?
Yeah.
How do I see it?
Oh, well, you can just kind of see the small icon. But his character is from Young Frankenstein, a movie by Mel Brooks. Great movie. But we're not going to get into that. We're not going to get into that right now.
No, I see it now. I see it now. Thank you so much, Christine. And wow, an hour turned into 90 minutes.
Yeah, I did. No, I love it. I love it. Oh, what, and the...
What are we going to talk about next week?
I don't know yet. I haven't decided.
Okay. All right.
But fair I'll enough. Keep you in the loop.
Yes. She's got the secret digits. All right, everybody. Yeah. I've got to go back to work. I'm going to get... I need a couple of more Mexican Cokes. That'll get me up to the show. Then it's coffee. And I'll see everybody tonight on Fade to Black. Thank you so much, Christina.
Bye, Jimmy.
The best.
This had to probably be one of my favorite shows I've done so far. This case is such an incredible story. I want to thank everyone in the live chat, everyone that gave super chats, all my Patreon supporters. I could not do this without you. I really couldn't. Check out the new backdrop in my spaceship. I couldn't have gotten it without you guys. So I want to say thank you so much. And like I always say, keep your eyes on the skies.